Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my special guest, my good friend, doo-wop royalty, and the driving force behind the Brooklyn Bridge, Mr. Les Cauchy. How you doing, Les?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing good. You know, it's the first time I ever was called doo-wop royalty, which is kind of cool.
Well, in my estimation, and because, you know, we've been friends for many, many years, but also, you know, you guys have been my idols for so many years because, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge actually is, you know, it's the primo show in the doo-wop genre. So, you know, no two ways about it. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're part of the royalty.
Hey, we really appreciate that, Mike. And we do have a history. We do go back and we had some wonderful shows together. I will never forget that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have a lot of great stories that I'll probably remind you of. But doing Harmony Street and the Brooklyn Bridge was a great show because, you know, Harmony Street had three ladies and it didn't interfere with the stuff that the Bridge was doing. I know that one of my greatest lines that I use all the time was Johnny saying on stage, "I heard Harmony Street do Juanita, and we found out that we've been doing it wrong all these years."
What a great story. I tell you, listening to you guys and girls was a treat to our ears, too, because the harmonies were really good. You guys were really concentrated, and you did use a lot of effort in doing the right kind of harmony intervals and changes, and they came off wonderfully. It was a good experience working with your group.
I know. Well, we put a lot of time and effort into it.
My one, it's a
I'm gonna go on.
as I say, you know, one of the things that I remember was the fact that usually the bridge stays in the dressing room till it's time to come out. But I know whenever we used to get up there, and you know, Ellen used to point to me on stage, and she would say, "Look, you know, all the guys are sitting in the back row watching us." You know, so that made us sing even better, because you know, it's always this thing. You know, if you want to get better at tennis, you play with somebody that's better. If you want to get better at basketball, you got to play with somebody that's taller. So if you want to sing good, you want to sing with the best. And that's all there is to it.
Thank you, Michael. You know, Alan's a good soul, and if you speak to her, I apologize. I've not been able to reach because it's been a little hectic over here.
Yeah, I know that.
But my thoughts are with her, and she's a good fan and a good friend. She does reach to us, out to us occasionally, and please extend our appreciation and love to her.
All right, I absolutely will, Les. And, you know, we're talking about Ellen Pacelli, who actually sang, she was a soprano voice in Harmony Street when we had Harmony Street all those years. But let's get into Les. You were born where, Les?
Well, it's not very well known. I was actually, well, I was. I was born in a little island called Malta, which is in the middle of the Mediterranean between Sicily and Tunis. But a lot of Europeans go there. It's like the Germans and the English version of their Miami going to Malta, because it's very sunny and very, very tropical, because it's not a real tropical island at all.
Right.
It's got that good Mediterranean sun to it, you know?
So, you know, living there, now you left at a young age, I would imagine?
Yeah, I left when I was 8 years old. You know, I had the good fortune last year of going back. I did a little pilgrimage with my wife. I actually went to Rome for about 3 days.
Uh-huh.
Then we flew from Rome to Malta, which is only about an hour flight.
Oh, wow.
About 7 days with family I hadn't seen in over 45 years,
uh-huh.
And then, which was fantastic, and then from there we actually went to Tunisia, because that's where my wife was born. When she was three, and Tunis was very French in those days, because she's French in origin.
Wow.
And we did our little pilgrimage, and then we ended up back in Rome for a couple of days, and that was our trip last year. So it's always good to see a family, you know, from many, many years ago, and it was just great, Mike. It was just great doing it.
Well, you know, Paulette and I, you know, we love to travel too, and we just got back from Spain.
Oh,
you know,
when did you go? Because I got back from Spain in September. Where'd you go?
We were there for a month. We were there, you know, during the World Cup. We were in Madrid.
But it's recently. Then.
And we walked out of the hotel, and there were a million people walking towards us. I thought I was in Midtown Manhattan.
Absolutely. I was in Barcelona and Tarragona, and it's a beautiful city on the coast. I did the Mediterranean coastal area, Valencia, gorgeous.
That's where they make the great paella.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in Valencia.
Got some good stuff over there.
And so we went to Madrid, Bilbao, Sevilla, Cordoba, Malaga, Ronda, Granada.
It's almost the whole country.
We did. We were gone a month, and we went to Marbella, which is actually Palm Beach. But you know, we had a ball. The people were friendly. The food was great.
I loved it. I know.
Yeah, no, it was, and the roads were great. The traffic.
Oh my God, that's one thing that impressed me the most. The highways were incredible. When you travel distances, very few cars on the road. I mean, we had the road to ourselves.
It's better than Italy, and it was much better than the LIE.
Oh, 1,000 times better than the LIE?
Yeah.
Excellent. That's good.
All right. So you were in Malta, and I'm willing to bet you $50 right now that Stan Ziska has never been to Malta.
No, but that's funny. He's been in Spain. That's one thing.
Yeah, I know.
Talking to Stan about that. And
Yeah,
you know, going to Stan, we just did a documentary or a segment of a documentary that our friend Ed Smith, our crew chief for the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right, Smitty.
Smitty.
Right.
Everybody knows him.
Sound man and wonderful guy. And he's been a mainstay with the Brooklyn Bridge for years, I know.
Top of the line. Now he's got a documentary company.
Right.
And we did an interview with the Del Satins. We actually got all the originals. Tommy Farrar, who sang with the Capriz all those years.
Right.
Freddie, Stanley, and myself. And out of that, we got a little excited, and we might do some some reunion events here and there, you know.
That would be great. As a matter of fact, Stan did send me the picture of all of you sitting on a couch. He sent me the picture the other day.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So watch out for that. Just, you know, we do it for the fun of it.
Absolutely. But you know, want to know something? Your fans would consider that a great place to be if we could have the Del Satins back together in their entirety.
Down a lonely street, and let me tell you, like I said before, what do I do when I get to my front door? I look in the mirror, and what do I see? Looks like the teardrops are following me
everywhere he goes.
A teardrop follows.
Hopefully in your neck of the woods down there in Florida.
Yep.
To, as one of the spots, you know. So we'll bring everybody up to date as we do that.
Well, you know, it was my pleasure, if you remember correctly, when I was singing with George Galfo's Mystics, that we did a show together at the Broward, and they actually announced that night that that was the first time I think Freddie got up and sang with the Capris that night. They said, ladies and gentlemen, the first time in many, many years that Freddie and Tommy have sung together in the same group. And I think Freddie did a couple of tunes with the Capris that night.
I remember that. Yeah, yes, that was very, very special.
Right, and Nikki was there that night, I think, as well. That was a few years ago, down in Broward.
Yes, unfortunately, Nikki's really can't. He's not up to it.
I know.
I tell you, but Freddie and I played some golf with him maybe about 6 months ago. Did a few rounds with him.
Right.
You know, even though he's not feeling well, he still hit the ball a ton. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, that's great.
It's just amazing how far he can hit that ball. I was amazed.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody knows, you know, and I remember the Del Satins from Long Island. I mean, you know, besides the hits, besides Teardrops Follow Me, as you might know or might not know, I had a group called the Islanders in those days, and we were signed with Relic Records and then MGM, and we did do Clay Cole's World. And I know that the Del Satins were very friendly with Clay Cole in those days, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we did a lot of work with Clay. We did a few years of television with him.
Right.
We did, the show we did was actually like a top 10, like a hit parade type show. And also we had a second show that we did with it was like an interview show at a couch and everybody hanging around and just interviewing and talking to special stars and celebrities.
I remember.
We spent many years with Clay and did a lot of video shooting and everything.
Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend Mike Miller.
We just had a great time. And I do remember that the venue you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the very high stage?
Of course, you couldn't see. The stage was so high in those, and you couldn't see the people. You saw those lights in your face.
It was crazy.
And as a matter of fact, we were there one night, and we actually opened up for Johnny Maestro and the Crests. And I think at that time, possibly if my memory doesn't fail me, I think it was Lois Lee in the group at that time. And Johnny pulled me aside, and he says, you know, your group is pretty good. I get a couple of sides with Cameo Parkway, you know, whatever. How would you guys like to come in and record something? And this was in the 60s.
Good memory.
And I do remember you and I had this conversation one night in a dressing room. I said, do you remember there was a manager? There was a very tall girl named Penny that used to walk around. She was a tall blonde at the World.
It was Clay. I think Clay's right hand man. Penny was very important to Clay, and I definitely remember Penny, you know.
Yep.
And it was great. I mean, that was a special place. Wasn't Murray the K involved?
It was Murray the K. He lost his liquor license, and then Clay Cole came in because there was, I think what happened was somebody, as happens in all the clubs, somebody was underage, and, you know, there was an issue. And I think Murray lost the place at that time.
Yes, that was unfortunate.
Yeah, it was an old converted airplane hangar in Roosevelt Field.
It was a good gig because a lot of people came out to see the shows.
Oh, it was a great place. Right. So, you know, then we move along, and as most people that know the music know, you know, the Dulsatins actually had so many hits with Dion. I mean, just, you know, every big hit that Dion had after the Belmonts had the Dulsatins on it, and that must have been just a tremendous thrill for you guys. I mean,
oh, yes. You know, we were very fortunate because when Dion broke up with from the Belmonts, he went solo, and really nothing really tremendously happened. He wouldn't get back to the group sound, the real street New York sound. And our manager got wind of it, and he sent us up there, up to the Laurie people, Laurie Records.
Right.
And we were the first group to audition, and he took us right on the spot. Right.
Wow.
Boom. We started working on Running Around Sue there after we did the audition. And that was
rumor has it that you guys sang Beside My Love for the audition.
Yes, we did. We loved that song.
I was there. I was a fly on the wall.
that was by the Dubs, right?
Right.
Right. And, you know, Mike, we had all those years with Dion. And let me tell you, Dion, it was such a learning process.
Oh, yeah.
We worked in the major studios.
Wow.
The same studios that Elvis recorded in, the RCA studios in downtown East Side, New York.
Wow.
And the creativity along the way and those recording sessions and rehearsals were something that stayed with us to the days into the Brooklyn Bridge and today from our experience with Dion.
Here's my story, it's sad but true. It's about a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around every single guy in town.
Hey, hey, whoa. From a run around Sue, my lips and lips and a smile on face, the touch of my hand and this girl's one embrace. So if you don't wanna cry like I do, I keep away from a run around Sue. Whoa.
You know, Dion's my neighbor in Boca, and I keep trying to, I call up every once in a while. I say, come on, Dion, come down the block. You'll come to Woodfield Country Club, and you'll, you know, and he says, nah, ask Susan or whatever. You know, he's Dion kind of keeps to himself.
Yeah, there are
nights when you'll see him in a restaurant, people walk over and they'll go, you're Dion, aren't you? And he'll go, no.
we've been in touch with him over the years. And, he's just a great musician. He came out with an album that completely blew me away, and it had to do with his guitar works.
Oh, right.
He wanted to play guitar, and I just couldn't believe it when I heard this album. It was really up there in the virtuosity of his guitar playing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, a few years ago, you know, I'm at Meisner Park, and somebody says to me, let's go see Bonnie Raitt. And, you know, they have the outside amphitheater in Meisner in Boca. And I go, and all of a sudden, the last 10 minutes of the show, she says, ladies and gentlemen, you know, he's a neighbor of yours. He's in the Rock and Roll, you know, Hall of Fame. He's, you know, you can see him shopping at the mall, whatever. And still, nobody's catching on. And she goes, Mr. Dion DiMucci. So 15-minute standing ovation. He comes out, and he does two blues duets with her and blows everybody away because, as a lot of people don't know, he was up for Grammy a few years ago with his Blues of the Bronx CD, and he lost out to Ike Turner, just edged out. So
yes, that's an amazing run there. I remember that. That was really great. I mean, he was right up there, which is amazing. You know, from
absolutely.
I was through The Wanderer and Abraham Martin and John.
Right.
One of my favorite tunes of all time. So.
You bet.
That's our buddy Dion. What are you going to do?
My point is you and all of the Del Satins have such great history, you know, just throughout the genre, you know, besides the things that the Del Satins did, which brings us up to here we are with Del Satins and Dion, and then, you know, here we have John with, you know, the band The Crests after the original Crests part. And to tell you the truth, this story has been told so many different times in so many different ways as to how the Brooklyn Bridge really came together. Mm-hmm. I was kind of around in those days, mm-hmm. and, you know, I remember kind of how it gelled, but maybe in a couple of sentences you can tell us the truth, Les.
Right. Yeah, the truth is there's only one true story. What happened was that with the Del Satins, first let's go back to the Del Satins, around 66, 1966, I got drafted. And,
oh, okay.
In the U.S. Army, which was, I didn't mind at the time, you know. I had to go to Vietnam. So I was away for a year or so.
I didn't know that, actually. I really didn't know that. I was in school, and then I was teaching at the time, and I drew a good lottery number.
Right.
But I never knew that.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to college at the time, but they were really desperate. This was 66 when things were starting to really pick up over there.
I remember.
And I was there actually during the Tet Offensive, and I was short. That's the term for almost getting home.
Uh-huh.
It blew up right in front of me. But I was fortunate. Within that time, though, 8 months later, Tommy Ferrara got drafted.
Oh, boy.
So all of a sudden, the Del Satins were missing two vocalists, you know?
Right.
So they picked up a guy by the name of Mike Gregorio.
Right.
Who eventually became, also stayed into what's known as the Brooklyn Bridge, but Mike became a Del Satin. At the time, Fred was looking around for Ferrara because, you know, they still needed the voice.
Right.
And Johnny was around looking for something different.
Right.
And to make a long story short, he became the lead singer of the Del Satins in 67. So.
Gotcha.
Fortunately for me, I got back, like I said, and as soon as I got back, Freddie came knocking on my door, and he said, hey, back, we're going, got to get back with the Del Satins again. I said, yeah, that's great. That's what I did. That's what kept me alive in Vietnam, was listening to music and hanging around with guys that can do a little singing once in a while.
Unbelievable, because you know how that is. Once you have that in your blood, it never goes away. I've tried to put it to rest a couple of times, and you know, the music always comes back, and you know,
strange, isn't it, so amazing?
And the music always soothes you and heals you, and it's the one thing that you can depend on in your life. It's always there for you.
How fortunate that we've experienced the same thing, regardless if you have a hit record or not.
I agree.
Like my kids, they're very musical, you know, and they participate with bands and things along those lines, and that's the gift. I said, everything else, you know, if it happens, it happens.
Yep.
But as soon as I got back, you know, the band was making changes that, you know, I fell into, fortunately, and the Dope Sounds became the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
So
well,
in 1968, it was a monstrous year for me. I came back from Nam. I joined a group that became the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
Right, that same year, in October, I get married. And a month later, I'm on the number one hit record in the country. I mean, what a whirlwind, you know what I'm
saying? What could be better than that?
And with the greatest voice in rock and roll.
You bet, and bar none.
How fortunate. You know, God really did something wonderful for me. And that was the beginning, the logistics of the Brooklyn Bridge from the Tell Sands.
Well, it's.
And he came back after, and of course the bridge was established, and he became one of the Capris.
Yeah.
Until last year.
Yeah.
Ferraris.
Which is amazing. And you know, of course, you know, I got back with John, you know, and we spoke about this, you and I, you know, to the Cloud Nine and the Et Cetera Lounge. And, you know, that's a way back in the 60s. And, you know, we talk about having hit records and not. How many talented groups were there on Long Island when we were younger? Some of them made it really big. Some of them didn't. But some of the ones that didn't, were just as good as some of the ones that did it. I mean, you remember Billy Joel and the Hassles.
Of course.
And then all of a sudden, you know, there goes Billy and you know, so many groups, but they were interchangeable.
You're so right, Mike, because Long Island was a mecca.
You bet.
For bands, and, of course, great female vocalists came out of Long Island also. Pat Benatar and
sure.
A whole bunch of Mariah Carey, you know, it goes on and on and on. But definitely, you're making me remember how musical Long Island was in the 60s and early 70s.
John once said to me, you know, we were sitting there and we were talking about old clubs and this and that and whatever. All of a sudden, he looks at me and says, I got to stop. He says, my brain is getting tired. I can't do this. He says, you know, and then he once said something else to me. And, you know, the funny thing about John was this, that a lot of people thought, there's John, you know, they thought that possibly he was a little bit standoffish, but they don't understand how shy he was sometimes and just how, you know, but he was so soft and sweet. And a lot of
the fact that John tried to, he stepped down on his own as a single.
Yeah.
Right? And he had some great songs. But as a young man, his makeup wouldn't allow it. You
right.
know? He had to be with a band.
Right.
John was a real band type of guy.
Right.
And that's what made him great, because he was able to relate on that level, which is the greatest thing. Being a member of a band,
well,
it's such a wonderful experience. You know, when you go out there by yourself, whatever.
Right.
But he was always a band guy.
Oh yeah, the team, and you know, look, I've been to sound checks with John. John is quite a stickler about having things the way he needs to have them, and a perfectionist in the harmony arrangements, a perfectionist in the musical arrangements. And that's why I think that's what put the Brooklyn Bridge a cut above everybody else who did this music, was the fact that the beginnings of tunes, because this is important to me, the beginning of a tune is very important. How you end a tune is very important. And there is no wasted energy. Every inflection, every guitar lick, every beat is right there and is arranged to perfection. And that's what put the Brooklyn Bridge a cut above the rest, you know, for all those years.
Mike, you hit it right on the nail with John. The way I express John is that, you know, he was laid back, but when it came to the music, he carried a big stick.
Oh, yeah.
That's in relationship to the articulate approach to things. And he was a stickler on making sure that even if you're imitating a song,
right,
imitate it to the T, you know, to every note. Well, we have a version of I Only Have Eyes for You on our a cappella album.
Right.
And the main guys from the Flamingos heard it and they said, this, you know, this is right up there with our version.
Right.
Because we listened to every note, and John was making sure that we hit every note properly. If you have a chance, give a listen to it.
Yeah, I know that CD by heart.
Yeah, it's Acapella, and I appreciate it. CD because we had fun doing that.
Oh, absolutely, and that was a beautifully arranged CD, and that CD was very well produced. I mean, you've heard that 100 times.
I enjoy listening to it. Like I said, the Flamingos version of "I Only Have Eyes for You" is something that I'll be forever proud of.
Oh, yeah. And Terry Johnson's a neighbor of mine, too. And we see them socially. That's his arrangement, too.
That's his arrangement, and he really, really thanked us for, doing it as best a job, and it's a wonderful job for that song.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you. Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy are bright. I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may not be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky. I only have eyes for you. I don't know if we're in the garden. Maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from.
And the other person, like South Florida is a mecca. I mean, the other person who always used to hang around in South Florida and some of the clubs and just very inconspicuously was Luther Dixon. And he'd sit there and I would point to I would say to people, see that guy sitting over there? He's a legend. He wrote this. He wrote that. He wrote 16 Candles. He wrote, and people would go, oh, and if you bought him a beer, he would be your friend all night.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
My goodness.
It was a great thing. Getting back to John for a minute, and the entire country, the entire world, everyone who ever appreciated or sang this music, it's all about feelings. There are no words anymore that can explain, John's career and untimely situation. at this point, I think it's just about the feelings that everybody feels, because I try to figure it out, you know, what to say to you in anticipation of this. I mean, I consider John my friend for all those years, but how do you explain that to somebody who traveled with him, was part of his family, not only musically, but in life, you know, somebody like Les Couchy, who lived with John for you know, the greater part of his adult life, and, you know, and inhaled and exhaled with him, what a loss it is. But at this point, I think it's just about the feelings that you feel.
I'll tell you, you know, I knew John for a long time.
Right.
50 years.
Right.
I ran into him probably around 1958, Lower New York, one of these community houses in Manhattan.
Right.
Guys hopping around, playing basketball from one community club to another, and from downtown we run into Johnny.
Well, neither one of you guys were forwards, right?
That's for sure.
Okay.
We did that because that's how things were.
I know.
Punk at baseball clubs.
It was the neighborhood, right?
And went all over the city and played.
Right.
And we run into Johnny's up there on the stage, not knowing at the time from a distance it was Johnny. Was
right.
Like, believe me, it's like he had a pin. A beam of light on him.
Right.
And if you can imagine, we see this guy playing, fiddling around a guitar by himself on the stage, very lightly lit auditorium. We walk in and we look at him, and it was like Johnny Maestro.
Right.
Because why was that so important, besides the fact that, you know, Johnny Maestro, is because the songs that the Del Satins first learned were Sweetest One.
Right.
And My Juanita.
The flip side of My Juanita, the song you heard earlier, goes like this.
Johnny also wrote this song.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And then Del Satins kind of paralleled John's career, because we ran into Al Brown.
Right.
And the guys from Coet Records and so forth, you know. It was just an incredible parallel that Destiny was pinpointing us to meet somewhere along the line, which we did as Del Satins in 67.
Right.
Myself in 68. So So being on stage with him for 42 years, and he was always on my left, you know?
Well, correct.
Night in, day out. It was like, it was a natural. And John always expressed or carried over a sense of security up there. You know? He made life easy for us, you know?
Right.
Went up there and sang. He was able to handle the situation.
Well, you know, the one thing, you know, and I know things about Johnny that a lot of people don't know. For instance, I know how many shows he started where he had the cordless mic that had the switch on the bottom, and he'd come out with the first tune, and you wouldn't hear him through the first verse, and all of a sudden, he'd look down, and he'd turn the bottom of that cordless mic on. That probably happened to him in about 15 shows.
Yeah, that's the early days when he still wasn't used to the process.
Right.
the fact of being with him, feeling secure and everything, being on stage with him, and it became a natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
It became a, the Brooklyn Bridge became a well-oiled machine.
Well, you know,
it's so
funny because I, you know, other groups would sit and watch, and we're, and I'll speak for all the other groups, were in awe and are in awe of how tight the bridge is and how night after night they could go out and do a show note perfect and hit those harmonies. I mean, you know, you got to have bad nights and you got to have, you know, but you guys didn't.
Well, let me tell you, you know, that's Johnny's influence on us along the way. I always give him credit because his a sense of perfection, you know, carried over to us. And you know, reality, we had no choice. You had, you fell into that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it became part of us. If it was anybody else, who knows? You know, it would have been maybe a different approach to things. But the Johnny's makeup, the being of Johnny Maestro,
right,
contributed to the fact that we became what we became, you know, a specialist in what we do, you know. As far as the stage, that was the epitome, you know,
well,
top of the line as far as...
Oh, yeah, two things I noticed, too, because, you know, like I said, I spent a lot of time with the bridge, and, you know, he was one of the few performers that walked back and forth in front of the monitors. He would walk in front of them, and he couldn't hear them. A lot of times he would step out in front of them and walk back and forth, and I would say to myself, he's not hearing the monitors, but he's so tuned into what's going on. Because, you know, there was a lot of music going on with the bridge, you know, and those monitors had to be right. And that's, you know, I mean, and I think that has had a lot to do with Smitty.
Oh, yeah, yes, definitely. And, you know, we evolved in the last few years into these inner ear monitors.
Right.
But I got to tell you, as a vocalist, you know, sometimes the musician and the group, they get a little enthused if some things pick up and everything. And then
it
got a little difficult, Michael, but being able to hit a note and you hear a big, like, clank.
Right.
Or a guitar rapping right through the notes that you're singing.
Right.
So when we got these inner ear monitors, it made such a difference. It's like actually each individual felt that they had their place in the studio.
Yeah.
Because we were able to listen to each other, concentrate, and that even elevated our performance even higher because we had no interference on the ability to sing. And Johnny was very instrumental in getting that because he was the first one to get the in-ear monitors, and he said, this is the way to go.
Wow.
He was feeling comfortable up there,
right,
and that process took us even to a higher level musically.
Right. Well, I have another Johnny Bridge story, and that is, you know, Harmony Street, you know, we got to do a lot of good things. Well, the one thing was we did the White House, and whenever we would see John, he would turn to you and say, hey, Les, look at the picture of Mike with Bill Clinton. You know, it's like, when are we going to the White House? And we would all laugh.
Remember
that?
In that picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we had an experience at the White House years before.
Uh-huh.
But we did some events for... President went a little bit off the wall there.
Uh-huh.
How about Richard Nixon?
Uh-huh.
We did some events for him. And you had Clinton. So
yeah.
I don't know. Who's the craziest out of the two of them?
We're moving on up. I don't... Probably Bill. I had a couple of pretty good talks with Bill, and the girls enjoyed. You know, the one thing, you know, when we first met Bill, he says to the girls, "Did you vote for me?" They all went, "Yeah." He said, "Then you can call me Bill."
Oh, that's fantastic.
And another story was, you know, we got to do the national anthem and a 25-minute show at Shea Stadium, and I called John and I said, "John, like, all right, what's the secret?" And he said, "Do not listen to the main speakers or you're going to be dead in the water. You got to listen to the live monitor, because if you stray from that for 1 second, you're going to get lost." And he was exactly right, because, you know, if you listen to the echo, it's about a second and a half behind. You have five vocalists, you're gone.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so
You did it everywhere.
Borough ones with the Yankees and the Mets.
Yep.
Mets separately, we did the Yankees separately.
Yep.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the
Mike, the craziest ones we did were when we did the New York Giants.
Uh-huh.
And we finished the song, and as soon as you finish the national anthem, they start running out.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys are like five times our size.
Right.
Like a tsunami wave. He ran off that field like you wouldn't believe it. And then when we did the basketball thing, we did the Nets and the Knicks.
Right.
Right? I mean, these guys were hitting the sky up there. They're as tall as the clouds, you know?
Yep.
So it was like, you can't believe humans are that tall, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Unbelievable. But it was fun doing the national anthem. How'd you feel? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, that was great. We actually, I'm going to tell you a Harmony Street Girl story. We were supposed to do the national anthem on a Mother's Day. I knew, Vito Vitiello was the head of public relations for the Mets at that point, and we were supposed to do the national anthem and a 25-minute show on Mother's Day that year. And they call us a week before, and they say, you can't do the anthem, but you can do the show. And Ellen says, it's my arrangement. You tell them if we can't do the anthem, we're not coming. And the girls linked arms and said, we're not going. So I had to call up the New York Mets and say, we're not coming.
Oh.
And instead of saying, you know, that's it, you lost your chance, they said, you know, we'll see what we can do. And son of a gun, we got to do it. Just before the playoffs, that year when the Mets were going into the playoffs, they gave us the 25-minute show plus the national anthem, and everything worked out great. But, you know, when those three girls linked arms, there was nothing that I could do to overturn it because that was it, Robin, Dee, and Ellen.
Excellent. They did a great job, man.
Oh, yeah, you know.
They got it done.
It was all good. I remember Johnny's stories because everybody likes to hear Johnny's stories. You know,
I can listen forever.
Years ago at St. James Infirmary, I had a group that was the house band. And I think you remember St. James Infirmary in Deer Park.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right. So John is playing bass at that time.
He was
playing bass. Yeah. So he forgot his bass. So he says to me, I don't have my bass. Can I borrow your bass player's bass? So Norm, my bass player, says, are you kidding me? of course. Yeah, you know, take my bass. So the bridge finishes their show, you know, and does the whole thing, and they walk off, and he puts the bass back in the stand. You know, we get back up. We got to start right away and get back up there. And Norm goes to play the bass, and it's all out of tune.
Oh, no.
And I said this to John one night. So when Norm came to a show, we went backstage, you know, and John looks at him and says, so, you know, all right, so what do you need from me? He goes, you want me to write you a check? What? He says, did you bring your bass? I'll tune it up for you. It was like so funny.
We really crossed the bats along the way.
I'll give you another night. I'm with the Islanders. This is before that, years before. It's at the Raleigh Hotel. It's in a room, and that particular night, there were about six couples in the room.
The lounge, yes.
Right, and we had done a show, like, earlier, and you guys were singing, and I walked over, and I says, you know, there's, like, nobody here. And he says, well, you know, we got an hour show to do, and John says, I don't care if there are three people sitting in the room. They're getting the whole show, and they're getting it full tilt. And they're getting everything that they came to hear, and that's the end of it.
That was Johnny's trade. I mean, whether there were three people or 3,000 or 8,000, like there was the last performance we did with John at the Mohican Sun,
right,
where he came up and gave his heart and soul and encore and did You'll Never Walk Alone.
I know.
And being on that stage with him for the last time, you know, that's Johnny Maestro because, like I said, regardless the size of the audience, it was the same thing. He delivered the same energy, the same perfection, the same everything. These are the things that made Johnny Maestro great.
I know. I mean, well, we saw you guys.
So about his ability, his voice. But there's so many things. Those are the traits that, in my eyes, make him great because I was there with him.
This song is for you because we know that without you folks out there, we wouldn't be here. That's right. And we know that and we appreciate it. So we thank you for it. And also, I want to send this song out to all the men and women who are over in that other place doing their job so that we can do this. And we thank them for that, yes, we do. And let's get them all back home. Is a gold
the sweet silver song of a lie. Oh God, hear the way.
I have it.
Inspiration.
Yeah, you mailed me one when it came out.
That thing took a long time.
I know.
To record. And if you listen to how it's recording, it was done absolutely by us totally.
Right.
They bring in Tommy Sullivan, who was an original
member,
to help arrange and help Johnny along with the production.
Right.
But we did, every one of those is our voices except for one song for a little section where we had to get a girl to actually get the real female gospel sound.
Right.
Do that. On one particular song, but we did all the vocals on that. If you listen to it, I don't care how high or how low you heard that voice.
Right.
That was us.
It was
a work of complete concentration and commitment.
Wow.
And it was made and especially to raise money for Medjugorje, which is a special area of Yugoslavia that has a major cross the line, cross religion following throughout the world, and they're building a big cathedral out there. And that was the intentions of making this album, A Peace on Earth, you know?
Right.
And that's why it has a lot of kind of inspirational tunes along the way, and those that could mean inspirational tunes.
Wow.
That album was probably the highest level of performance by Johnny and the Brooklyn Bridge. If you hear You'll Never Walk Alone,
right,
do a version, or I Believe, which is my favorite.
Right, of course. We all love that one, you know.
The way we redid it, of course.
Right, I heard it, of course.
We know Larry did it over the years.
Right.
But we talked to Larry about it, and we said, this is a special thing, you know. Understand why we're doing this song. We actually had to get a kind of a feel of okay from Larry.
Yeah, I hear you, because, you know, that's an area, you know, like everybody has their stamp on their song.
It's like Johnny has the stamp. Nobody.
Right.
Nobody is going to do You'll Never Walk Alone. I mean, there will be, but nobody's going to do it like him. And the Bridge itself, projecting into the future, we'll probably not do that song, because that's going to go, that is Johnny's song, and that goes with Johnny.
No, I understand totally, you know, and John, I mean, you know, anybody who knew John loved him so much. I remember, now I'm going to take you back, we're up in New Paltz, a couple of shows in New Paltz. And you guys were late getting there, and I was standing out. I was actually standing with the guys, Gary Lee Schwartz and Rick McCaffrey from the Solid Gold Jukebox.
I love those guys. Yeah.
And so here we go. You guys were a little bit late, and I'm standing in the highway waving, and come on in, and, you know, everybody's standing around, whatever. And they're doing a live remote, and John's eating, and you guys are in the dining room. And Gary Lee comes over, the zany nut that he is, and he sticks the microphone in John's face, and he says, "We're here, ladies and gentlemen, with the, you know, doo-wop legend Johnny Maestro." He said, "For your listening fans, and it's a live remote." He said, "John, tell your listening audience, who do you think is uglier, Tony Bennett or Alice Cooper?" And he sticks the microphone in Johnny's face, and John just like pushes the microphone out of the way and says, "Is he serious?"
You know, and Gary has that kind of humor.
And John left.
Great. Now, Gary, constant communication. I tell you, it's been a rough, we're going back about a year now.
Yeah.
You know, when things started to...
Well, if you remember correctly, the Coconut Creek Gary Ferrari show, you know, I was there with Paulette.
What time of the year was that, Larry?
That was probably the end of November. And
yeah, well,
and John, you know, I came into the dressing room back then. Everybody was tired, you know. And, you know, you had been just come back off a cruise or something very strenuous, you know. And I took one look at John and I said, oops. And
it wasn't even... You know, we're going back to September, even when you know, there were signs.
He had lost weight.
Weight and signs that, you know, I've been in the business end of this thing out of necessity. I got into it in 1979.
Yeah, well, John always used to say to me, "It's, you know, if you need to know anything, all of my energy is spent being Johnny Maestro. If you need to know anything about the Bridge, ask Les."
I appreciate what John, because gave me that job.
Yeah, no.
But he sure had a knack, too.
And you did, and you've done it well.
I appreciate doing this, you know. But my thought about Johnny was that, you know, he understood everything I got into. You know?
Right.
Working in the city with the agents, the managers, and learning the process along the way, you know. And when I have to, you know, administer something, I would, you know, talk to John.
Right.
He understood, you know. He had a sense of what it's about, you know. The detailing, you know, I took care of that and so forth and so forth. But the feel of what has to be done, Johnny and I were very much in unison with that, right up to the last,
I know that.
Right up to the last, whatever. And going all the way up to, like I said, September of 2009 is when we start to feel the effects, when he had to start, you know, canceling gigs.
Right, which is something that the Bridge never did, because you guys did so many shows.
Believe me, that man never wanted to miss a job. And if it got to that stage, you know, a red flag was waving. Something was going on.
And he would always say, and, you know, as many shows as we did together, he would always look in the back and he would say, you know, if there were two rows empty in the back, he'd say, "Why isn't it sold out?"
Right. Well, you know, it was a process, and the whole, it is what happened, you know, and was extremely sad and untimely.
Oh, you know,
painful and
I even the worst
that you can imagine.
I think about it and I say to myself, it's got to be tough to talk about it because, you know, I lost my brother some years ago. And, you know, what's funny is that my brother sang and my brother had a vocal coach and it's a familiar name. The guy's name is Jerry Bragan.
Oh, come on.
Yes, that's true. That's another tie that we have. My brother took vocal lessons from Jerry Bragan, and I know that Jerry Bragan was a vocal coach for The Bridge for a while, from Queens.
Absolutely. I tell you, he was so instrumental in getting us. You know, we had being on the road was a wear and tear process over the years, you know?
Right.
And in the other days, we used to smoke cigarettes. And,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And luckily, in the mid-70s, we stopped. But, sort of damage was done already.
Right.
But Bragan, got us into a very strict exercise process.
He was about breathing. And my brother had one of these little flute-type things where he'd breathe through it
for
breath control. Right.
Exactly, breath control. And then a series of vocalizing and things along the scales.
Right.
And till the very end, Johnny kept it up. We all did to a certain degree, but Johnny kept on doing those vocalizing.
It's amazing. Well, you know, I mean, Johnny's range...
Amazing.
I mean, any...
And that's what his sign was. When he couldn't do those...
Right.
That's when he'd call me and he'd say, listen, I can't do it. I can't do the vocalizing.
Unbelievable.
Because that was the process for him to prepare for the stage.
Right.
When Johnny went on stage, he was immediately ready to go.
Well, you know, I know this about John, and a lot of people don't know this about him. Just before a show, John would pace...
Oh, yeah,
he would pace back and forth.
And so forth, you know.
And then he was the only one I knew that could eat a complete bowl of pasta and go right out and sing. And he would say, his famous line, he would say, it coats the throat.
I always said, you know, he used to say, gee, John, how do you do it? How do you do it? You know, like, how do you do it? And I used to butt in and say, hey, macaroni, what do you think? That's how we did it, the macaroni.
I have a story. Newtown High School, the Brooklyn Bridge and Harmony Street, is probably during the 90s sometime. Ellen made a cheesecake.
Oh, yes.
And so she makes a cheesecake, she says, this is for after the show. So we do our 90 minutes, and we come back inside, and you and Freddie and John all have cheesecake all over your mouths. And
we
got into the cheesecake. So I said, John, you know, cheesecake is like dairy. If you eat a lot of dairy, you know, something. He says, don't worry about it, man. You know, it coats the throat, whatever. Gets out, right? And he goes, ooh. And he walks off the stage with us. I says, what's the matter? He says, I'm closing up, whatever. No, that's not even it. And I'm going to remind you something else. Marty hits the note. Everybody's lined up to sing I Thank the Moon.
Yes.
And it goes, whoa. And for the first time I ever saw this ever with the Brooklyn Bridge, John says to the audience, he says, you know, in the old neighborhood, we used to get one do-over. We're taking ours now.
Oh.
He goes, I don't know if you remember that night.
But yeah. I remember the event. I remember the cheesecake.
Yeah.
and I remember Helmut making it special for us and all that. You know, so I remember all that, yes.
Yeah, and I remember John going, you know, it was all that dairy, you know. It's kind of, you know, when you drink a lot of milk or you eat a lot of dairy, a lot of times it's not the best thing for singing sometimes.
Oh,
you know.
True, definitely.
You know.
About that, yes.
You know.
What I'd like to do is an a cappella song. Yes, it's true when they say that when the moon's inside, it casts a magic light on love. I fell in love with you on a perfect night in June. And darling, I thank the moon while we walk.
The moon was in a cloud. I wanted to cry out loud. I love you. Just then the moon appeared, and two hearts began to swoon. And
darling, I thank the moon. Remember, I was afraid and shy to tell what was in my heart.
Then the moon seemed to say, you're in love.
You're in love, you're in love, you're in love.
We kiss and gave.
And gave.
Of the stars.
Pop, 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 pop.
When the moon's inside, it casts a magic light. Our lover, it made you love me too. On a perfect night in June.
But what great times we had together. And even Dion always says, just like Sinatra used to say, Vic Damone has the best pipes in the business, Dion would always say, Johnny Maestro has the best pipes in the business.
Oh, yes.
You know.
A lot of people, you know, said that. And I tell you, I had it all, being able to work with Johnny. That will stay with me forever. I mean, with me forever. And I'm glad that I was able to be there with him.
Well,
I was glad to be, very instrumental on stage and off stage, instrumental in, carrying on the process of Johnny Maestro and the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, you know, we're talking about most of your adult life and, everybody going through everybody's trials and tribulations and illnesses and family things and stuff with their kids. And you know, it's not just about the music. It's like you become part of each other.
All the events, the family get-togethers, it's just one total story, you know. And that the major chapter, the book itself.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well,
on March the 24th, I can't remember.
Well, my fantasy and probably my logic tells me that there should be and there probably will be a movie at one point.
No, there is finally. A few of us did a special music expo for 3 days in New Jersey. It's one of those things where you meet and greet and
right.
autographs and stuff like that with
right.
a whole bunch of acts. But we spend a lot of time with Little Anthony and the Imperials and
right.
Harry Wilson and
right.
Al Jardine of the
Beach Boys,
who
right.
are all Hall of Famers.
Right.
And they're the ones that say, oh, man, Johnny, the band, you guys, you know, you should be in the Hall of Fame and all that. And there's a lot of people we talked to about it, a lot of important people behind the scenes who were able to get Little Anthony into it. With the,
yes.
And then we talked to those people and they're expressing how we could do that, how
right.
it's timely now, and the chances are good now since
right.
Artigan's not there anymore. Is
right.
Little Anthony,
well, you know,
and Johnny does have a chance. The band has a chance because there is a movement now going
yeah.
on.
Well, and there has been for a long time.
It has
you know.
Been on a petition
right.
level, which is fine, you know, a few hundred thousand.
Right.
But it takes the inner works of knowing the right people and the
I
right
know.
Campaign. So we met these people that kind of going to lead us in that direction.
Yeah.
And I think the door's opened a little bit now, possibly get Johnny and
yeah.
maybe eventually the band and so forth
well,
into the Hall of Fame.
You know, Terry Stewart is the CEO, and, you know, he lived...
We were talking about.
And he lived in Connecticut after we did the White House. You know, Terry invited us to his house several times. You know, we were at a couple of New Year's parties and whatever. And I'm very friendly with him. And I've spoken to him over the years about it.
Yeah.
And he says to me, quite frankly, he said, you know, I only get one vote. And John's got my vote. He said, but you don't understand how political it is here. He said, there are people that don't belong here that are here. And there are people that should be in that aren't in. And you know, it's just that kind of a thing. But I will tell you, Les, and you and I know that people who know and love and have listened to John and the Bridge and the Crests all of these years, you know, if he goes in, which he will, it'll be a wonderful thing, but that does in no way diminish what John and the Bridge have meant to everybody over the years. It would be nice, and it would be like an extra cherry on the cake, but actually, everybody's love is right there, and you know yourself, because you know you're still in shock, and so is everybody in the family. And you know, not even to get into the family or the politics or everybody's feelings, but I know you've heard it from everybody you've come in contact with, you know, how much you're loved. I don't even know if you understand how much you're loved.
Well, you know we don't dwell on it.
I know,
but we know we see it when the audience. Our answer to that, Mike, is when we see the audience out there.
Right.
When we do fill up the house, and we did get this series of standing ovations and the encores, that was their communicating their love to us, and we were able to understand that part of it, you know? So,
right.
Yes, I do understand it on that level. Yes, I do.
Right. I mean, when you're inside of it, sometimes it's harder to understand. And then, you know, even just taking Les Couchy, as Les Couchy, I mean, Les Couchy has probably been on more, his voice has probably been heard on more top 10 records than a lot of artists who you know, that we build monuments to and idolize. You know, it's you've been on countless top 10 records.
That's
think
good.
About it.
I mean, it's a good feeling to know that when I hear Ruby Baby or something along those lines.
And you can pick your voice out.
I go, yeah, of course. You
right.
Pick your voice out. But it's good, you know, you're out there in the diner and you hear it and it's like a very personal thing. You know that you're there and the people are listening and getting that vibe, which is, I think, a very special thing that we all have as artists in the business, but along the line, you know. So,
well, you know.
That's what's wonderful, and of course Johnny will be heard and listened to and watched now because of his videos. That's his gift to us now, you know, that we're able to listen to his voice as though he's still here.
Oh, yeah.
And the feeling that, you know, I could see him maybe walking through the door any second, you know, that's the kind of feeling that we have occasionally with John, you know, like he never left us. That's the gift that, you know, he will always be with us.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's the other thing, too, is this, watching a Brooklyn Bridge show is that the fact that you guys had so many tunes to choose from, I mean, on stage, and even some of the cuts that people are not aware of, like, you know, every once in a while you'd pull one out, like, you know, What You're Gonna Do, which he says goodbye, and all of a sudden it's like, where did that come from? But, you
right,
know, you,
right.
you had so many tunes in your pocket.
Right, we recorded a few albums, and then we recorded all the original Crest and Brooklyn Bridge stuff.
Well, I know the tunes like Molly May and some of those. I remember.
I love Molly May.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was such a great tune.
And I'd say every night, I love you.
I love you.
I love Molly May. Be true.
Be true, Molly May.
No dating. I am all
for you.
For you,
Molly May.
keep waiting, send a kiss now and then, till I see you again. I'm dreaming of you. The picture we took together before I went away, I carry in my wallet to look at. Molly May,
I love Molly May.
You dearly, I will hope and I'll pray no one steals you away. Molly May, Molly May, Molly May, Molly May. No one steals you away, Molly May, Molly May,
Molly May.
I remember, John, you know, not so much later on, but in the old days when you guys used to do two completely different shows, you know.
Oh, in those days.
And you know, and John would come out at the end and go, all right, call them out. And people would say, Molly May. And
yeah.
You'd go, nope, that's not it.
Good, I remember that.
And he'd do a different one.
To call them all angels or something.
Yeah.
You know,
right? Well, you know, let's take your husband, my wife. I mean, that was a very controversial tune.
Yeah, Tony Wine wrote that tune.
Yeah.
I mean, today it don't mean anything, but in those days, Jesus, give us a break, you know. It was a cool song. And that tune, Johnny just wails on it. Listen to the way that song. It's like one of my favorite performances of John.
Right.
Song Your Husband and My Wife, you know. It's just that he just wailed on that tune, you know.
She knows I'm true, but what she don't know is I'm true to only you. Tell me, where does it stop? Does he know his married life is on the rocks? Now before you say you want me for the rest of your life, what are we gonna do about your husband? About my wife.
Well, you know, and the other thing was, and it's interesting to me, you know, how many tunes there were about angels. And I started thinking about it. And then one night I woke up in the middle of the night, and then I had a discussion with a very good friend of mine, actually Kenny Held, who's a good friend of mine.
Oh, geez, Kenny, yeah.
And Kenny said, well, Michael, what do you want? Master Angelo is the master of the angels.
Excellent analogy.
So he said that's where the angels come from.
Yeah, that's destiny right there. Right there.
Yeah. Now, is it true that Les Couchy said, you know, we have about as much chance of booking this group as we do in selling
the
Brooklyn Bridge?
I got to go back.
Okay, because that's...
I mean, personally.
Yeah.
Which was the beginning of the Brooklyn Bridge. It was
right.
At the manager's office.
Right.
And I'll be specific. It was an agent who we still talk to today.
Right.
And it was the partner of an agent that's still very much now living in Florida, Neil Hollander.
Okay, know him well.
He knows Neil, and his partner, David Zahn.
From Banner,
yes.
You got it.
You know what's going on.
Of course.
The Banner talent.
Right.
And the manager, Betty Spurby, at the time said, geez, you know, I have an 11-piece band here, you know.
Right.
What am I going to do? And so the agent goes, geez, it's going to be easier to sell the Brooklyn Bridge than selling this band. And everybody went, there it is. The Brooklyn Bridge.
So that's great. So Neil was in the room. I remember Neil
yes.
Going back to the Camelot Inn in Mineola.
Oh, gee, the Camelot. Yeah, that's right. That those are the days of the Celebrity Inn in Freeport and all that.
Right.
That's been the same Neil Hollander.
Oh, yeah.
His partner, Dave Zahn, was instrumental in, you know, triggering that name out there.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We're at the Broward Center, and you walk into Richard Nader, and you said, you know, Mike Miller's my cousin. And Richard said, he is? Really? Wow, I didn't know that. And, you know, it was like, I thought to myself, he knows that he probably couldn't be. But he stood there with a straight face, and he said,
oh, that's great.
Really? I don't know if you remember that.
It was great. It was great.
Yeah, no, it was fun. Well, you know, I mean, look, let's just say that the whole doo-wop, these people that sang this music, you know, it's a very, very, very big family, and it's not even 6 degrees of separation. It's more like 2 or 3 degrees of separation because
that's the community of musicians and singers and
everybody knows everybody, and we all have ties, and you know, it's great, and you know, for me too. I mean, I'm still out there singing. I do my show with Tracks, and I'm doing the radio show now, and you know, I'm doing some booking, but I just can't pull out of it completely because it's like my blood, my life's blood. But I'm getting itchy to sing again, Liz.
We have a responsibility.
Right.
At the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
And, you know, the responsibility is that this is what we do. We've been doing it since we were kids, you know. So we definitely feel it is necessary to continue the music of the Brooklyn Bridge. So we are reevaluating our situation right now, and really looking to get going again. And at the right time, we'll know when it is the right time.
Right.
To present our, you know, our appearances back in the marketplace. And the important thing to know is that, you know, being with Johnny for 42 years and me personally knowing for 50 years.
Right.
That Johnny's definitely going to be a part of who I am.
Right.
A part of who the Brooklyn Bridge is.
Right. Well, that was actually my next question, and that is, you know, we all know what the Brooklyn Bridge has accomplished, and we all, I don't think there's anybody that plays this genre or listens to this genre that doesn't have the complete set of Johnny's works and the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, whether it be with the Crest or with the Bridge. And I guess my real bombshell question is, you know, what's in store now for the Bridge?
And, that's what we're actually thinking things out and how to approach this the right way, you know. Like, there'll never be anybody to replace Johnny Maestro.
Yes, I know.
It's not even in our vocabulary. That word doesn't exist. I just threw it out there to let you know that word does not exist.
Right.
What we want to do is present the music, you know, present the songs that we all took part in, and of course, you know, doing all those tunes that Johnny was the vocalist on all those years, we'll probably present them in a different aspect.
Right.
So that will definitely be one of the things that we are pursuing. It might take a little time, you know, it's still a process of, you know, the feelings for John. It's still very strong with our fans and the family, and it's something that, you know, has to mellow out a little bit.
Yeah, because you're still in a mode, I mean, you know, and of course, you know, I've been in touch with John's family, and you know that I'm friendly.
Right.
And you know, it's still something, A, that's hard to talk about. B, you know, maybe it's not even time to talk about feelings, because sometimes it takes a long time till you can get your feelings out. But the C part of it, and the next part of it, is that you know that the legacy has to continue, so that, and I think it has to do with evolution more than revolution, you know, because...
yeah, evolution more than revolution is correct.
Yeah, you'll know what to do when the time is right.
We inherited, you know, the process, so
right.
we're going to carry it on, you know.
You know, I mean, I talk to Louis once in a while, and I know how emotional he is, you know.
He was very emotional.
And you know, and everybody involved, and I mean, you know, and we, and I put me in the we, who are, you know, like one step removed, even though we're close, we're still one step removed from the nucleus. You know, I know what we're all feeling, so I can't even begin to imagine what you guys are feeling, you know, as being part of the nucleus of it.
You're right.
You know, it's like driving down the highway at 60 miles an hour, and all of a sudden the steering wheel falls off.
Absolutely.
You know,
because it does. Yeah, you start wobbling around all over the place.
Right.
But there are some promoters out there, Mike, that and fans out there,
right?
Friends that they're encouraging us to, you know, pursue.
Right.
Pursue that road as far as, you know, continuing the tradition of the music.
Right.
So that's what's encouraging us. And there are a few out there that are going out on a limb right now. One in particular is Cheryl Maiman.
We all have something coming up. It's a cruise.
Yeah, we got a.
We need to talk about this.
Coming on in November.
Right.
She's got a real good show. She's got an International Temptations. They're going to be there. We work with them in Germany.
Right. Richard Street.
The Contours are going to be there.
Right.
Do you love me?
Yep.
I used to love that song.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago.
Bobby Valley will be there.
Too. Yeah, he's a good friend.
Cleveland Still and Leslie Anderson and the Dubs.
Oh, Fantastic. I mean, they sound so good, Mike.
Right.
I mean, that's one of my favorite groups.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you know, when I moved to Florida and Harmony Street could not do Dan Barry on the green, mm-hmm. we actually, I called up Leslie, and they actually filled in for us then. So we're very friendly with them. We did a lot of shows with them in Connecticut.
I got a story about Leslie.
Oh, go ahead.
Of course, his name's Leslie, and my name's Leslie.
Oh, yeah, right.
We're talking and say, hey, I was in Vietnam in 1967. He says, I was in Vietnam in 1967.
Oh, no.
And I said, you know, when I got there, I was in this little place called An Son, you know? He goes, you got to be kidding me.
Wow.
I was in this little place called An Son.
Unbelievable.
And I said, wait a minute. I was there when I just got into the country. That was around March. And he says, I was there in March. Now, can you believe that? I mean,
no.
You know, there's GIs all over the place, you know, and stuff like that.
No, I can't believe it.
Yeah. But it's so true. I mean, it's the coincidence of it all.
Yeah, but you know what?
I think it's a great book.
I'm thinking to myself now, if the planets were lined up a little bit differently, you would have come home. You would have been with the Dubs.
Sounds like an Outer Limits kind of a story, right?
Absolutely. But you see, things like that happen. I mean, you know, it's crazy how things just, you know, they go around and around, and how they land is like very different. So
going back to Johnny though for a second, Mike. You know, Cheryl booked the Brooklyn Bridge,
right?
You know, 10, 11 times.
Right.
We went the Caribbean with our eyes closed, for heaven's sake.
Right.
But of course, she's putting together a very special, very special segment of the cruise dedicated to John.
Right.
So this is something we're all looking forward to with a video presentation. And
absolutely. And Jimmy J Jimmy J and your good friend Mike Miller will be co-MCs cruise.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
We talked about it. I wasn't sure you actually are going to do the cruise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Paulette and I are going to be there.
It'll be good stuff.
We upgraded to a royal suite. We're going to be there. And so I'll be there. I'll even sing a few tunes on his cruise, which will be cool, you know, and it'll be good fun. And it's
that time. I think, you know, we'll have a sense of what direction that Brooklyn Bridge is going to be going.
But anyway, about the cruise now, the cruise, I think, is the 8th to the 15th. It's going to be a Celebrity Cruise Line.
Saturday, back on Saturday. Don't worry.
So the cruise is going to be the 8th to the 15th, and it's going to be on Celebrity Lines. It's Boca Raton Travel. Cheryl Myman, call Cheryl Myman. If you're interested, call Cheryl Myman at Boca Raton Travel.
Of course, your area code 561.
Right.
But the number is 395.
Right.
14. And they just asked for Cheryl.
Okay, so one more time. The number at Boca Raton Travel is
561-395-1414.
Yeah, oh, we're going to have so much fun in that cruise. And from what I understand, there's going to be a doo-wop workshop.
Oh, that's always fun.
And yeah, it's going to be...
That's when we gather a bunch of people and see if we mold them into some kind of a cappella groups, and they all compete against each other.
Right.
That's a riot, I must tell you.
Yeah, because Cheryl said to me, you're not coming on this cruise, Michael, unless you bring some tracks and you sing on this cruise. I said, you know, you don't have to pull my arm.
Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to sing?
What tunes am I going to sing?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm doing one either.
Going back to the roots of rock and roll, huh? The roots, buddy. Yes.
No, I'm not sure yet. We'll see. You know.
Yeah, maybe we'll team up and have some fun together.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have some fun together. I mean, let me tell you something about what this cruise is going to mean to everybody that comes on this cruise. It's going to be about celebrating life. It's going to be about celebrating the music. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about celebrating Johnny. It's mm-hmm. going to be about celebrating the bridge. It's going to be about good friends that know you guys and are coming because they just want to be with you guys and support you. And it's also going to be about making new friends, people that come on this cruise to make new friends with the bridge. Because, you know, as you know, Les, the Brooklyn Bridge is the nucleus of this cruise, and they've hung some really nice ornaments on the tree around it. And it's going to be great. Also, the Teenagers are going to be on this cruise.
Oh, great. Excellent.
So it's the Teenagers, the Dubs, Bobby Valley, the Temptations, the Brooklyn Bridge,
And Mike Miller.
And Mike Miller and Bobby J. And also Tommy Sullivan's coming on this cruise.
I heard, yeah, Tommy.
And
before we helped Johnny. Even.
And Tommy Garrett of the Classics Four will be on
the
cruise.
Oh, good, good. So that's going to be a lot of it. So, big community of musical vibes all over the place.
Oh, yeah, it'll be, you know, a lot of eating and drinking and having good times and kicking up our heels. And,
you know what will make it perfect? The weather.
Yeah.
Caribbean, you want that nice weather. Make that a smooth ride, you see?
Oh, yeah.
So we're looking forward to that, you know?
Now, here are the 10 guys, and the one guy you know is the Brooklyn Bridge. Their lead singer is Johnny Maestro. Let's have a fine hand for them. Welcome.
Hi, this is Mike Miller.
And Paulette Miller.
Of the Harmony Street Show. If you enjoy doo-wop the way Paulette and I do, join us November 8th through the 13th, 2010, on the Doo-Wop Celebrity Cruise and Tribute to Johnny Maestro. We'll be there along with Jimmy J, DJ of the Stars. Sail back in time to the music of our lives, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Cruise together with your favorite recording artists. We'll be sailing back in time. 5 nights to Roatan, Honduras, and Cozumel, Mexico. On this cruise with us will be the Brooklyn Bridge with their tribute to Johnny Maestro, Richard Street's Temptation, the Contours, Cleveland Still in the Dug, Bobby Valley, and the legendary Teenagers. Paulette and I will be there, and special guest Tom Sullivan, original Brooklyn Bridge member, and Tommy Garrett of the Classics Four. Enjoy the intimate closeness of private concerts and sing along with them and dance with them. It's 5 nights, cruise on Celebrity's Century. We'll have a private cocktail party, 6 private concerts with 5 national recording acts, private doo-wop boot camp with you and the artists, and there'll be a private dance party with Jimmy J, myself, Mike Miller, and Bobby Valley, with his tribute to his brother's group, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. There'll be private autograph sessions. There'll also be a private farewell jam session featuring all of the 5 national recording acts. Please contact Cheryl at Boca Raton Travel, 800-326-1414. At Boca Raton Travel, the number is 1-800-326-1414. What a great time we're going to have. It's going to be an emotion-filled 5 days with a special tribute to our dear friend Johnny Maestro.
Yeah, it'll be great. We get to party together again as we've done over the years.
And hope it's successful. We're going to encourage it too, and then we'll hopefully have more with Cheryl. You know, she's an expert at this.
Oh, absolutely.
And we even talked about the future. Maybe next time bringing the Del Sands along.
Well, you know, that's another thing that I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, you know. It's just kind of been bantered about, you know, in a very, very small circle of people, and you know, everybody's eyes lit up because, I will tell you that Stan Zyska, when I started the radio show 2 years ago, was my very first interview.
Excellent.
And his chops are still great.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, we were just with him about a week ago.
Right, and, you know, he's just a terrific guy. He calls me all the time. He'll call me, like, when he's on his way to a gig or something. He's just a sweetheart.
Excellent. Wonderful.
You know, in the aftermath of Johnny's wonderful career, I guess the best tribute that we could all pay to Johnny is to just keep singing his songs, keep playing his songs, and that John would most likely want the Brooklyn Bridge to carry on and have the same great times and the same great harmony, you know, that it always had.
This next song we're about to do for you, it's a song that we performed on the Ed Sullivan Show. Remember him?
Really Big Shoe.
Girl, I heard you're getting married. Heard you're getting married. This time you're really sure. And this is the end. They say you really mean it. This guy's the one that makes you feel so safe, so sane, and so secure. Baby, if he loves you more than me, maybe it's the best thing. Maybe it's the best thing for you. But it's the worst. To me, I'll never get married.
Never gonna marry.
Never again. get married. You know that's not my scene. But a girl like you needs to be married. I've known all along you could live forever in between them. But it's the worst that could happen.
To introduce all the members of our group to you folks, okay? Okay, so you know them by their first name. So let's begin by introducing you to the guy who just performed that fantastic guitar solo. He's our lead guitarist, and his name is Jimmy Saul. So say hi, Jimmy! Yeah! Let's go over to the other side of the stage. All the keyboard work that you've been hearing this evening, along with some vocals too. And once in a while, if you look closely, he may even give you a smile. On keyboards, Marty D'Amico. Say hi, Marty. Oh yeah, they love you too, Marty. Yes, they do. Now we're going to focus our attention to the rear of the stage, the heartbeat of our group. He has been with us for more than 33 years. He has been with us for more than 33 years. And before that, he was with the original American touring company of Jesus Christ Superstar. So if you will, on drum, let's have a nice round of applause for Lou Agesta. Say hi, Lou. We love you, Lou. Oh, yeah. I'm going to move out of the way here to the other side. You know, we are proud to say that we have four original members in the group. Yeah, and I introduce you to two of them earlier, but I introduced them to you as former Del Santos. But let's do that one more time, only this time as original Brooklyn Bridge members. So if you will, again, let's hear it for Fred Ferrara, one of our original members. Let's hear it for Les Couchy again, another original member. And right in the middle of it all, he has been with us from the very, very beginning on bass guitar and vocals. Let's hear it for Mr. Jim Rosica. Say hi, Jim. He loves it. You know, it's been a long day today, and we'd like to thank the management and everyone involved with this evening's performance for being so nice to us and treating us so well. We want to thank them, and we'd also like to acknowledge our sound crew. Don't know them all by name, but our very own sound engineer is out in the truck right now. Well, where's the camera? Out there somewhere. His name is Smitty. Smitty and his crew. We have Anthony, and we have front of the house mixing by Rob all the way back there. So a nice round of applause for them, please. And everyone else involved with what is going on this evening. We thank all of you. We really appreciate it. Yes, we do. We had a great time today. And again, we hope you guys are hiding, you know, from what?
John, a special thanks to Mickey, Chrissy from Century Promotions. Thank you so much. We love you.
You're good.
Yeah. And you're of course, the theater, Will and Catherine and a whole bunch of you. Thank you so much for your great hospitality.
You know, Les, we forgot somebody. It's very important.
Really, Fred?
Yeah. The guy was just over here a minute ago.
This guy?
Gone. On the way. Right. But he is our lead singer for the past. You see, we're celebrating our 38th anniversary this March at Brooklyn Bridge. 38 years. Come on.
Come on.
Oh.
It's a long and winding road.
It's a lot longer than a lot of marriages. Yes, sir. So here's one of the finest voices in the business today, and I think you'll agree with us, the one and only Mr. Johnny.
I'll take you your wonderful words to heart here, Mike. And
you know,
said it so eloquently, and hoping you know it'll come to fruition and carry on the music as you just nicely stated.
Yeah, well, you know, Les, you know, we've been friends for a long, long time, and it's like I said, there aren't enough words to cover the situation.
No.
So it's
the only thing we can do, like,
about feelings,
is express the music, and
yeah,
and that's the completeness in itself. Yeah. The music was always what Johnny was about.
Yeah,
right? It's from, you know, forever. So that's the best way to express Johnny, yeah, Maestro.
Well, Les, you have my love and my support always, and anything you ever need from me, you know, all you got to do is call me up and ask. And, you know, my chops are still pretty good if you need that. Whatever you need, if you need the radio part of it, if you need whatever you need.
Okay.
You know, you're my buddy. So, well, Les Couchy, thank you so much, my good friend, for sharing this time with me on the Harmony Street Show. And all of your fans wish the Brooklyn Bridge just, you know, the best in the future. And I know they'll all be there to support you. Thank you so much for spending this time with me.
Michael, thank you so much. It was a pleasure reminiscing with you and expressing these wonderful musical thoughts of the past and the life of Johnny Maestro. And we're looking forward to seeing you on the cruise.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
Let's do some singing
so
together.
We absolutely will, Les. And I love you, man. So.
Excellente. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Les. Love you.
Soon.
All right,
okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, baby. Oh, I love you so. 16.
16 candles.
Thank you, Les. Love you.
Soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was my interview with my good friend Les Couchy of the Brooklyn Bridge, recalling his musical history, his days with the Del Satins, and his wonderful relationship with Johnny Maestro. John will remain in our hearts forever. Anyone who loves, sang, or listens to this music will understand how important Johnny was to the very existence of this music. And as you heard from Les, they're not done yet. Stay tuned, because the Brooklyn Bridge will go on forever. Good night from Harmony Street.
For I love you.
Thank you.
Good guy. Hey, we love this song. After all these years, right?
Woo. On home.